And we're joined in the studio right now by Hazel Belvo. Hazel is an artist, master teacher, and mentor. Hazel is currently an artist in residence at the Grand Marais Art Colony. Her works have been displayed in private collections, permanent collections all over the world at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts, among others. And she was a teacher at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design, and also this is her 30th year of teaching at the Grand Marais Art Colony. You have been a busy person this month.
Busy.
Yes, you have. You're working every day at the Grand Marais Art Colony, and you've got open studio every evening, and you're doing lectures on Monday nights and this Friday night too. How are you holding up?
Oh, pretty well. It's been very exciting, actually.
Good, good. It might seem obvious, but could you just give a little brief description of what an artist in residence is for people out there listening?
Sure. Well, before that, I want to say on my way over here, I was listening to Molly be interviewed, and she was talking about her band, the Hootenannies.
Oh, yes.
Yes, when she was a kid. And, you know, Breon Morrison is my son.
Yes.
And it's when he plays jazz up here, but when he was growing up, when he was about 12 and 13, he and his friends had a band called the Northwest Brewers. And I just loved her story about that, and I thought about him. He's playing tomorrow night.
Yeah, well, we all have embarrassing band names in our past.
Yeah, well, the artist in residency, it's for a long time, the Art Colony's been tossing around the idea of having an artist in residency. An artist in residence come work there. And last summer, there were 2 weeks when there weren't classes, and I rented the founder's studio because I'm working on this series of work that's large scale. And in that nice studio, I could put 7 pieces, and I could work on them all in relation to each other. So it was really a very good thing that I did that, because our studio, really, we, Marsh and I, each have one work wall, so you can't put up 7 big pieces. And while I was doing that, a lot of people stopped by, and they were really interested. And so they would come to the front door or to the window or around to the back door and ask questions. And I started thinking about this being a very good way to have maybe the opportunity for a whole town or whoever wanted to come in and see an artist in process.
Sure.
And so the Arrowhead Council for the Arts granted the experience, and it's really an experiment.
Yeah. Well, it seems very successful. So you get something out of it.
I do. I get the space for 2 weeks, and I get feedback, responses.
Right.
And there's nothing more wonderful than that.
Hold that thought. I want to come back to that.
Okay.
The response part. But the community gets something really pretty special to be able to, you know, it's a unique opportunity to be able to see an artist working in process. And I stopped down to the studio the other day to see what was going on, and well, maybe you should just tell them what you've got laid out there for people and get a little insight into what's going on, maybe a preview.
Well, I brought 7 pieces, as I said, and 2 of them are finished so that people could see what my goal is, where I see a finished painting, and then 3 were in process. That means they've been worked on. I work on them over a period of time, layer after layer. And then one was a blank canvas, and the other was just a drawing on a canvas. And so I'm bringing them all along. I'm working on them all sort of in concert with each other.
You also had some sketchbooks there for people to see the progression from. I'm always fascinated. There's kind of 2 parts to the artistic process, and one is the actual doing the art, whether it's painting or sculpting or whatever, writing. And then there's that thing that happens in your head somewhere that you say, gee, you know, how do I communicate that to people? Mm-hmm. And seeing the sketchbooks and the laid out pages that are essentially, well, not the same drawing, but similar drawings, just changing little by little by little, all next to each other in a row, that really was insightful to be able to see that process taking place.
Yeah, good.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The title of your lecture series is Dispelling the Mystery and Building Community, and mm-hmm. art really can be kind of a mysterious thing. Your first lecture is about visual language, mm-hmm. Which, by the way, if you missed it, you don't have to feel bad because you can actually watch it online at the Art Colony's website, and I did actually get a chance to see that. One of the things you talked about in that I thought was really interesting, how children know this visual language mm-hmm. from birth. I mean, they just understand it. They get it. And then somehow, on purpose or not, we kind of teach that out of them as they grow older and they learn to use math and reading and different things.
The verbal language takes over.
Right. Yeah. Unless they have an experience mm-hmm. or some kind of a inspiration. Mm-hmm. And is there an inspiration that happened to you when you were young?
Oh, yes. Yes, there was. Two really important ones. But when I was very young, and it's like an unforgettable memory. I was not quite 2 years old when I connected with a sunset. And the sun went behind the clouds, big cumulus clouds, and it had a gold edge around the edge. And all the color was behind it. And there were also other sensual things, too. The wind was blowing. And so anyway, my mother could pinpoint how old I was. And then when I was about 3 years old, I colored the freshly wallpapered dining room with my crayon.
I understand Picasso did that, too.
Yes. Well, my mother said I was so proud that she didn't have the heart to punish me, so mm-hmm. she was a good mother.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And you had some young people in the studio the other day to look at your work and to talk about your process, and did they have any interesting observations?
Oh, yes. I had them. It was really a great experience because, for me, I had them look very carefully at the work and pick one and give it a title.
Okay.
And I haven't titled them, but I do think of them in certain ways. And one little girl gave the painting exactly the name of the way I thought of it. And I thought, that's really amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were great titles from all of them.
Your visual language was working well.
Yes.
And so that was a group from grade X or from...
Yes, it was. Okay. Third grade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. So over time, the conventions of visual language have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, different eras of art and technology has something to do with that, but also worldview and perspective mm-hmm. has changed. If you're using visual language, how does metaphor work into that? How does not really telling the story as it is fit in for you? Are you trying to you're not telling the story necessarily overtly, you're trying to put something out there that gives people an idea, but you're not necessarily throwing it out so it's real obvious.
Mm-hmm. I think I know what you mean.
Good, because I'm not sure I do.
Well, at least I didn't give an attempt here. I'm inspired by certain things, and a lot of what inspires me is philosophical mm-hmm. poetry, and so that an image may come to me based on that. But I think one of the most important metaphors that I'm known for, because several museums have pieces in their collection, is the spirit tree mm-hmm. up in Portage. And I first saw that in 1961, and I've been drawing it and photographing it ever since. It's a long-term interest of mine. And for me, the metaphor is one of survival and endurance. And so the tree stands is an icon for that for mm-hmm. me, and it means a lot to a lot of other people too, especially the people in Portage.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that's really notable about all of the works of yours that I've seen is that they're really quite large.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about that a little bit, and I wonder if you could pass on why do you paint mm-hmm. big?
Well, for one thing, there are two reasons. I think it's a 20th century brought back large scale and 20th century painting. And part of the reason for that is that we began to consider a peripheral vision. So if you're encountering a large picture plane, you are surrounded with the image, and you have some of the image in your peripheral vision, and it takes a large-scale piece to do that. So you feel more enveloped by the painting.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. The other is my images are now, they're figurative. And so if I paint a figurative piece, it needs to be either a very small scale, so it becomes an object, or it needs to be life size. So, because a life size image is encountered by a viewer in a different way,
right? You relate to it differently.
Yes, you do.
And you can sort of feel yourself in that piece, in that work,
mm-hmm.
when it's a life size and large scale. So next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to talk about the actual physical process of painting. Can you preview that just a little bit without giving away all of your secrets?
Yes, I'm going to talk about drawing. I am not going to talk about the metaphors.
Okay.
That's the last.
Right, right. That's why I wanted to come to that.
Yes, and I'm going to talk about different kinds of paints and materials and why I use what I use and how I want things to look based on the materials, and I hope that there will be enough people in the audience who are in the process to ask questions, that we can have a dialogue about the process, about mm-hmm. the techniques. And I probably will review some of the language
mm-hmm.
for people.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
The saturated color and the large scale is kind of, you know, the voice
mm-hmm.
almost that is what you're known for. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about this, but I think you said that you don't title pieces, or is that you don't title them until they're done?
Yes. Well, I have a title for the whole series, but
okay.
I'm not going to reveal that yet.
Sure.
So,
But at some point, you do put
yes,
a name on it.
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But really, this is kind of where we're coming to that interaction and response part.
Mm-hmm.
You also said that the final step is seeing what people think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's one of the really cool things about this Artist in Residence program is not only do you get to see, you know, a world-class artist at work, you get to see a little insight into the process. You know, you're a pretty good teacher, too, so that's kind of fun just to have an opportunity to get the lecture out aspect of it. But to be able to interact and talk about, so what does this painting mean to me? Because what it means to you isn't necessarily the end product, is it?
No, it isn't. And when you were talking about the creative process, I believe there are three steps to it.
Mm-hmm.
One is the conception, which is the internal work that an artist does, and then bringing that to fruition to the outside world, the external voice, and that's making the piece. And then the final and really important part of the process is the audience,
mm-hmm.
and they actually complete a creative work.
Mm.
So I don't think you can have a voice unless you have an audience.
And right, if the tree mm-hmm. falls in the forest.
Right, that's right.
All right. So that last Friday, the 20th, will be the night that people will be able to come in and talk about the pieces, and theoretically they'll be mostly done, I
mm-hmm.
presume,
mm-hmm.
And we'll kind of go from there. just some other things. You've lived on the North Shore for many years, and you know, you've been in different places around the world, around the United States, and you always end up back here.
I do. I thought about that this morning when I woke up in front of an open window, and the water was right out there, and you could just smell the lake, and I thought, what more beautiful place in the world could one live?
It smells so much better than an ocean.
Oh, well, no, I like the ocean too, but yeah, but no, that's right. I have lived a lot of places, and I have loved all my experiences, but the place where I want to be is here. And I when I first came, the first time I was here, and I saw the night sky, it was so much darker than almost any other place. Even where I lived then in the summertime on the tip of Cape Cod, It's dark, but it's not as dark as here.
Yeah.
And anyway, I love it here.
Yeah, that was a real formative thing for me when I was young, and I lived in the Twin Cities, where it's, you know, light pollution everywhere, and I thought I knew what dark was, and I came up here on a canoe trip with my dad, and we looked at the Northern Lights, and we saw the Milky Way for the very first time. It was a beautiful, crystal clear night, and I mean, I'd kind of knew that it was there. I kind of understood the concept, but I'd never really seen that beautiful dark sky.
Well, I love living in the city. I lived in New York City and then Minneapolis. But I need to have both an urban experience occasionally, but I really need the natural experience, nature, because I grew up on a farm in southern Ohio. And it really, it's in my bones.
Yeah, to be connected to the land.
Yes, and my best place that I can be for my soul is 1 foot on land and 1 foot in water. Mm-hmm. So this place just suits me perfectly.
Sure.
Besides that, it's warm. The people are warm.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And really, we are in a very unique and lucky situation all the way around. Mm-hmm. You taught for many years at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that was really interesting.
It was interesting. I love the people. And I was the chair of fine arts.
Uh-huh.
So I dealt with a lot of people. And it was a good place to be able to put some of my strong beliefs in practice to affect people. So... yes, it's a good school.
And then Grand Marais, you've taught many classes here, and you've got classes coming up too over the summer and next September. The other thing that most every artist that I talk to, whether they're a musician or a painter or writer, they're working on something, but there's always this thing that is next, or if I could do this one different, this is what I do, or what's next for Hazel?
Well, partly that's why I work in a series. So I have this big body of work, and I want 25 pieces in it.
Mm.
And right now I'm working on 21. So I have to finish that first.
Sure.
And when I do, I have to find the really appropriate venue to show the whole body of work. And my big thing right now is to think I would love in 2014 to have a big retrospective of different bodies of work that I've done. One of them would be the tree. Another would be the paintings like I had up here in the JHP 1 year with my sister's place painting was in that. People might remember that.
Yeah.
that, and then this body of work. So I would really like to find the right venue and have a retrospective, so to speak, because in 2014 I'll be 80.
Really?
Yes, and I think it would be an absolutely wonderful way to welcome that decade.
Yeah. Well, and that you know, if you're still producing that much work at 78,
yes,
that's impressive.
Yeah,
that's very impressive.
Well, I hope to be like Monet, who just goes on and on, and went on and on.
Well, I don't think anybody would consider it a bad thing to just die at the easel.
No, I'll keep that in mind.
just don't lick your CAD red.
Uh-huh.
That'll get you there quicker.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with people about the Artist in Residence program or about your lectures that are coming up?
Well, I hope that this is like the beginning of something for the Art Colony that may turn into a regular program of having artists in residence, because I think it would be great for the Art Colony and for the town. And this whole idea about dispelling the mystery, I mean, I think more and more we have dispelled that. People know that you need to have certain things to make all kinds of art. And there still is a kind of a, oh, I can't draw, or I could never do that, or, you know, that kind of, I still hear that regularly. And I think this is a way.
I have to admit to being one of those people. When I was young, I was good at math, I was good at science, and I was really encouraged to go that route.
Mm-hmm.
And in seventh grade, we had to take an art class. And I didn't dislike doing art projects in mm-hmm. elementary school and that sort of thing, but, you know, it just wasn't mm-hmm. that, I wasn't that good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a teacher that actually taught us how to see beyond what we were trying to draw.
Yes, good.
And how to not pay attention so much to whether it was good enough, but just make it all go. And I actually found that without looking at the paper, without looking at the pencil, I could probably do a better drawing than most of the other kids around me. And I thought, well, that was a really empowering thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, art is part of everybody, and everybody has some of that in them. And even if it's just picking the right color on the wall, that's art.
It is, of course, and everybody has their own way to express.
Yeah.
So we have to honor that. It's really very important.
Well, it's been an honor speaking with you, and it'll be an honor
to
attend your lectures on Monday and Friday. I know Nancy and I are going to be there. I'm sure lots of other people are, too.
It'd be great.
And
great for me.
Yeah.
And I hope for you all, too.
Yeah, well, getting a program together for people is always a little nerve-wracking, but somehow we managed to do it. Well, thank you very much. We've been talking with Hazel Belvo, who is an artist in residence at the Grand Marais Art Colony through April 20th.